This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to get a history lesson on Jacob Summerlin, the man known as the Cracker Cow Hunter, who is also reputed to be the first child born in Florida and whose Summerlin Road is named after in Lee County. But first, a study was recently published by an associate professor of social work here at FGCU, and it looks at how people living in Immokalee feel about their health. The stated purpose of the study was to, quote, assess the physical, oral, and mental health status and health care needs of Latinos, Latinas in the town of Immokalee in Collier County, Florida. The study explored how different aspects of their lives impacted their health and mental health. Not long ago, WGCU's Rachel Iacovone talked with one young resident of Immokalee about how health concerns have impacted his family.
I'm thinking about going out of town. Yeah, Immokalee is okay. When you grow up in the same town, the same little small town, and there's really not much going on for you, I just don't want to stay. I want to move out. But for now, you know, I have to take care of my dad, too. He had a heart attack a couple of years ago, and he's just really weak.
How long did your dad work in the fields?
Since he was 20. And he's around 72 right now. So I'm going to say around 40 to 50 years. Any vegetation you name, he picked it. But he never let me do it. I was a baby. I wasn't even old enough to pick yet. My mom was from Mexico. They're both from Mexico. My dad, too. My dad's from Matamoros, and my mom was from a little town called Guerrero Chamacua. And it's funny, too. It's two places, like, 24 hours away.
And they met here in Immokalee?
No, they met in Matamoros.
What brought them here?
Work. Yeah, basically. My dad, when he was younger, he used to cross over a lot, and they wouldn't send him straight to jail because he was illegal. But he still got out and jumped back over here. And then he ended up getting his papers. Him and my mom. My mom was working in the fields with my dad. They diagnosed her with pulmonary fibrosis. She passed away. So far, what the doctors were throwing around, it was probably because of what she inhaled in the fields. The chemicals probably messed up her lungs.
Did your siblings have to go out there ever?
Yeah, they were old enough. I was considered the spoiled one. They were already in high school. When they didn't want to go to school, my dad would take to the field and said, this is going to be the end result if you don't finish your school. And they didn't like the field, so they went back to school. Don't get me wrong, Immokalee is a pretty good place. You have friends, you get together, and it's a small town. You can walk from your house to the store and all that. And if you ever want to start off somewhere, it's a good place to start off until you end up bringing your life up. Some people get comfortable. That's cool. If you feel comfortable here, then go ahead and stay. But a lot of people, they just want to go a little higher.
That was Jesus Galan talking with WGCU's Rachel Iacovone in Immokalee. Concerns like his are not unusual, at least according to the study that we're talking about today. A lack of local specialized medical care, lack of health care coverage, and financial stress are very real worries for the majority of Latinos in the town. We're in the studio with Dr. Lirio Negroni. She's an FGCU associate professor in the Department of Social Work and headed up this study. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
We're also talking with Karina Carcamo. She is the research assistant who helped on the study. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also hoping to have us joined by phone Dottie Cook from Rural Neighborhoods in Immokalee, who learned about these findings after conducting a similar study. Hopefully she can join us in just a little bit. We are talking about how Latinos in Immokalee feel about how their health care needs are being met. You're invited to be part of this conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Dr. Lirio Negroni, tell me a little about this study. It seems like it was geared toward how Latinos in Immokalee view their own health care, which is an interesting approach.
Yes, it is. We wanted to begin with some basic data that help us better understand Latinos. So we decided to ask Latinos themselves to share their perceptions of their own health and different factors like their health care, their satisfaction with use of health care services, their concerns about the community.
Instead of just assuming how they feel about things, just by looking at the data and statistics of health numbers, this many people with cardiovascular issues, asking people about how they feel about the accessibility. Was that has anybody done that before?
Well, there's studies in United States and international that have that approach. It's influenced by some theoretical perspectives that claim, like strengths perspective, constructionist theories that claim that individuals are the best ones to really provide the information as to what is going on in their lives, what's really happening to them. So there are. We did not find in our search anything in the area that had that approach. And also we didn't find much published data about Latinos and Latinas in Immokalee and their health and mental health.
Mm-hmm. Karina Carcamo, how did you feel about being part of this study?
I was really happy to be part of this. Myself being Hispanic and living very close to Immokalee, I felt I had a close connection with them. And by helping participate and finding out what their needs were something that I was really happy to be a part of.
So what exactly was your job with this as an assistant?
I was mostly in charge of all the questionnaires and the interviews with the Immokalee residents. I do speak Spanish fluently, and there were many residents there who didn't speak English. So I would ask them the questions, translate what they needed, and I would write it all down, see their needs, go to different places, and figure that out.
So you're having those face-to-face encounters and talking to people. How did they see being approached and asked how they feel about their health care? How were they happy that someone cared to even ask?
Oh, most definitely. That was the main portion of the whole group that we did. And it was multiple days. It was months that we were out. And most of the individuals, I would at least say 90%, not if more, that they were really excited that someone even cared to even come out to them and ask what they needed.
And to that matter, we were able to get to that point because we were totally unknown to the community. We reach out to community organizations. We introduce ourselves. We gain their trust. And they were the ones who helped us promote the study. They were the ones who helped with the recruitment, in addition to additional interview days that we went on our own and we went in the community. People began to hear about us through people they trusted. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about trust.
Yes.
It's a small community.
Yes. It is.
Know?
It's a small community. It's a diverse community. There's in our study, more than half were foreign-born Latinos and Latinas, most of them immigrants. We never ask about their status. We think that we were interviewing a lot of undocumented individuals. There's a lot of fear about trusting others when you don't know if that person is going to use your information to deport you.
I would think that would probably have been one of the greatest challenges. Was that a tough one? And those community partners, was that the key?
Yes, I agree. And like Karina said, that was key. First, we had to use several months to introduce ourselves and develop connections and relationships. Then we have to we use the students, Karina, and we had another research assistant, a male research assistant. They were known. They were trusted. Then there were a group of 5 student volunteers, all from Immokalee. The community knew them. They helped us even strengthen the relationships with the church that participated. There were 2 organizations, 1 elementary daycare center. So all those elements converged and helped.
So what you do with this study, then, you don't just walk up and down Main Street and start knocking on doors.
No.
You had things arranged ahead of time. Karina, did you go to a certain place, or did you go to people's homes when you were able to or invited to do so?
Homes I never went to. It was more organizations that we went. We met up with there was 5 volunteers that we said, as Dr. Negroni said, and she advised us which groups were the most popular, which ones there was most people in would willing to be part of the study. So we did go to a few churches. We went to a few homes, needy homes, like St. Matthew's homes. We went to those, mm-hmm. a couple of those. We went to daycare centers as well, and that's where we would go. So it wasn't a house to house. I didn't go just walking around picking up a person.
Yeah.
It was organized.
Talk about suspicious activity. Probably not going to get the most straight answers.
Yeah. Now, the other research assistant and I, we went to 2 Saturdays, and he knew areas in the community, and we showed up. Karina and another student volunteer showed up to certain commercial areas and stand up there and recruited people who were coming in or coming out. Mm-hmm. So we did a little bit of everything.
So Immokalee is majority Latino, but not 100% Latino. So what's that breakdown? And you only talked with people that are Latino.
Yes.
Only talk to these groups of people. What amount of the town is made up of that? Is it really three quarters?
It's three quarters Latinos and Latinas. There's an increasing Haitian population.
Yes.
And I have to say, there were 3 days that I would go in the mornings to this particular agency that provided services. I would sit down outside and people would know. There were a lot of Haitian people who reached out to me and asked me if they could participate. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I felt my heart was broken that I could have to tell them no. I didn't have someone who spoke Creole, and the study was on Latinos. So we feel the other researcher, who is Dr. Payal Kahar, we're both co-investigators, we feel that we have to go back and work with the Haitian population with other resources.
Well, I just don't know that many people really knew that there was maybe people wouldn't know that there's much of a Haitian population there as well, because you don't hear about it as much.
That's true.
You know? But so you found out about it, and now you're planning on going back to do another additional study.
Well, in the summer, we're doing two more projects with Latinos and Latinas. But our heart is telling us that we want to go back and expand the research with the other population.
So does the population change throughout the year? I mean, does it kind of explode like we do in season? I mean, does harvest season increase the number of people there?
Yes, it does. Most definitely. They were saying that at times in season when there isn't as much work in the farms, that they go up north and they find jobs up there because there's nothing in Immokalee that they can work for. And then when the workers in the farm, especially where most of the workers were farm workers, they would come back down. So it's seasonal over there as well.
So did that inform when you went to do your study?
It impacted it. We had to wait a period of time that we were not anticipating. So we ended up, we thought we were collecting our data when they were in the summer, when they were away. But it happened that we were collecting the data when they were here. We collected our data between October, November, and December. So we were able to capture a lot of them who were back from the north. Now, Immokalee has different types of population. There's the seasonal Latinos and Latinas. There's a group of Latinos and Latinas who have lived there, according to what we found in the study, for years and years. And then there's the other group of Latinos and Latinas who were born and raised in Immokalee or adjacent areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have different life experiences and health profiles.
Were you surprised that there were so many people that had been there for so long?
Yes, I was. What about you?
I am surprised as well, most definitely. There was generations there as well.
Yeah, I guess people think that people kind of get there, kind of like Jesus was talking about earlier, get there and then leave. But there are a lot of people that stick around.
They do stick around. There's a few that do stick around.
Yes.
Especially in our study, we have a few that did tell us that they stayed there. So they were born and raised there.
Mm-hmm. So what was one of the most surprising things that came out of the study? What is one of the responses that you did not expect?
Well, in order to say that, I have to talk about the epidemiological paradox. That is a concept that has been documented in many studies with regards to Latinos who are immigrants and Latinos who are born and raised in the United States. The epidemiological paradox states that or have come up as a result of many, let's say, foreign-born Latinos and Latinas showing lower health problems, even though as immigrants, they face a lot of acculturation stress and sociodemographic stressors. So the expectation is that if you're an immigrant, your acculturation stress, it's going to be lower. What we found here was the opposite. And we have been thinking and reflecting why our immigrant population is the one who's presenting more health problems and more acculturation stress.
What is acculturation stress?
Acculturation stress is the reaction, the emotional and physical reaction to having to respond to the demands of living in more than one culture. You come to a country, you come with your own values, your own traditions, your own lifestyles. You enter to be part of a mainstream culture. And different factors may force you to live and be more as if you were from the main culture. So the person copes with a lot of demands, frustrations. They could be rejected if they're not part of the culture. And it gets more conflict because...
Well, and that rejection can go in both directions.
Yes.
So if you go too mainstream and then come come home to your community in Immokalee, you may be seen as selling out, I guess, yes. Maybe. I mean, there would be a lot of – there's a kind of a balance there.
And you see that struggles in families with more than two generations. Families who are more traditionally acculturated and I'm struggling with the more acculturation stress, they may react to the second generation, their children, in ways that create tension in the family. Then the generation that has been raised here, that is more mainstream acculturated and is being pushed or pressed by the family, the traditional family, to look more like the traditional culture, they will also have those feelings of tension and courage and frustration towards the older generation. So you're right. It's mutual. It's on both sides. Same thing with, let's say, the Latino versus the Caucasian or white culture, which is – I don't like to use that because I think that there are many European cultures in this area. Mm-hmm. So it's not good to talk about the white culture versus the Latino culture.
Well, then there's diversity also within Latino cultures,
exactly.
As well. And when we're talking about Immokalee, what is the predominant Latino culture there?
Mexican.
Mainly, it looked like it was, from your study, 70 to 80%?
That's the census data for 2016. They were Latinos, but 80-something percent were Mexicans. In our study, most of the participants were Mexicans.
Yeah. So what other cultures are represented there?
Central. Guatemalans I saw a lot. There was a second predominantly was Guatemalans. And something interesting that I found was there was – the Puerto Ricans that I interviewed, they were recent Puerto Ricans that they were coming away for. They were leaving what had happened, the
Hurricane Maria.
Yeah,
Hurricane Maria. So there are some Puerto Ricans that have found a home there.
Yes.
Well, that's really kind of surprising. So the acculturation was a biggest stressor. So that would affect their mental health. Would that also impact physical health?
Yes, both. Our study shows significant differences in terms of how they rated their health, their physical and their emotional health. Those who were more acculturated, who also happened to be younger and have more education, they self-rated their physical and mental health as better.
Oh, they felt like, hey, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay.
The older generations that came from a different culture and then resettled, they seem to report more health problems?
Yes. And that has a lot of implications. We've been debating about that. And some things we have, Dr. Payal Kahar and I have been thinking, is that many studies in the United States do a lot of generalizations about Latinos. We're learning that we have to be cautious. This is a particular Latino group. Like Karina was saying, there's a mix of seasonal immigrants, farm workers, people from a particular regional area, or in this case, Mexico and Central America. So there might be a unique reality in Immokalee. Mm-hmm. That it's not similar to the realities that studies have been identifying in other parts of the United States.
It is truly a unique community. It really is.
I agree.
And I just think it's really interesting that you went out there to just kind of hear, you know, what they had to say about how they feel that their health is. One of the things that we talked about before the show was a lack of specialized health care. Why would that present as a big problem? I mean, it's a 40-minute drive, 45 minutes to get to Naples. I mean, logistically, it's difficult, but why else is that hard?
Not only is the specialized, but they can find that in Naples if they drive out, but they wanted also Spanish-speaking doctors. Like I said, most of them didn't speak more than one language. It was mostly just Spanish. So they wanted a doctor that they can trust and confide in. So someone who spoke Spanish and was specialized would have been great in a community like that.
Well, looking at the study results, it looked like about 80-some percent said that they were pretty satisfied with the Spanish-speaking the Spanish-speaking accessibility of their doctor, but that would be the general practitioner
exactly.
That they're dealing with in town.
Exactly. When you look at – that was what we call quantitative data. When we asked them, what are your major concerns? What are major concerns for Latinos in Immokalee that need attention? The issue, like you mentioned, of specialized health care came up. But still, we have to acknowledge, even though there's a lot of need in Immokalee, there are many organizations and services – and leaders, resources that are trying to provide for healthcare services. And I have to acknowledge Florida State University and the College of Medicine. They have different projects there. The healthcare network of Immokalee also. I even found out this weekend that the University of Miami, or one university in Miami, comes every certain time to Immokalee. But that's, like you said, that's general health care, preventive health care. But people who have more special needs, not the transportation, the Spanish-speaking health care, financial problems, they don't have the resources to pay for the cost. Sometimes they're asked to come. I had one person who was saying when I interviewed her that they would have to go several times a week to see different doctors. That's difficult to afford.
That's hard to do just down the street.
That's,
you know,
true.
And if it, so, now another question I want to ask. So, it seems like the Immokalee, when you described it to me on the phone earlier before we talked, way before the show, it's kind of in its own little bubble. They're very protective of one another. They look out for each other, kind of almost Rockwellian kind of neighborhood kind of situation where people are looking out for one another. But the specter of leaving that safety zone means you're going to be encountering some additional questions, maybe about your documentation and things when you go into other communities that are not Immokalee for those specialized healthcare things. Does that fear factor into this, these kinds of concerns?
It's hard for me to affirm that, but I can tell you that so far what I have seen, what I have learned, being there, meeting so many people in Immokalee, is that this is a very traditional community. It's a very faithful community. My impression is that whether native-born or foreign-born, they ascribe a lot to values of familismo, very much family-oriented, very much Christian values.
82% Catholic.
Yes, yes. Yep. So I think that because of that and their commonality of being immigrants and children of immigrants, that bring them together and that helps them to be a community. And they have a lot of community events. I would not be surprised that if I would be in their situation, I would prefer to stay in Immokalee. And I would feel safer in Immokalee than going out. But that would be my speculation. I don't know how Karina thinks about it.
I definitely agree. I can't really say 100% because we didn't talk about their immigration status in this study. But most of them, whenever we talked about them with healthcare and where they would go, it was mostly a clinic. They never went outside of this clinic. And I would mention to them, because I'm a resident of Naples, that there's an emergency department in Naples if they wanted to ever go there. And that wasn't something that they would want to do.
Yeah, a lot of questions, and you don't really know what you're going to encounter when you get out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're already outside of your home country, right?
Yes. And also, more than half of the participants we interview did not have health insurance. And in the open-ended questions about healthcare concerns, there were several people who were mentioning that that needed to be addressed, particularly for the immigrant population in Immokalee, that they were hoping something would be done so health insurance would be transferable between among states. So if you go north, you could use the same health insurance for those who had, but also that health insurance opportunities needed to be available. They also mentioned they wanted to have a hospital and definitely the specialized healthcare services that are very limited as far as I understand.
I wanted to ask you also a little bit about the housing situation and how that is going to impact people's health. And I think that's something that you're planning on looking into a little bit more this summer. Tell me about that, and also about the after effects of Hurricane Irma.
Yes. As I said, we had an open-ended question where we asked, what are your major concerns? When we tabulated all the data, housing came up as the most important concern after health. And they were talking about the conditions of their homes. Irma really impacted them very badly. And actually, I have to acknowledge, there's a coalition in Immokalee named the Omet needs coalition that have been very focused and working with a lot of interagency organizations on addressing the impact of Irma on so many families. And I went to a meeting, and when I heard all what they're doing, I was so impressed. But at the same time, they need so many resources. So these are very committed people. But going back to your question, I just wanted to acknowledge them. Going back to your question, I think that after Irma, they were already dealing with landlords and tenants, landlords who were very abusive and very neglective. I hear people sharing with me, those who I interviewed, about how much they were struggling and how they landlords would penalize them. There's the notion of finding housing to buy. That's another one. And not being able to own, high rents. So all those factors worsened when Irma came.
Did you hear that as well? Did you find, Karina, that a lot of people were in a rental situation?
Housing for rentals is difficult. It was a 2-year waiting period for the two complexes of apartments, affordable housing, a 2-year waiting period just to get on the list. So that's a problem already there.
When you have a rental unit that's been destroyed and a landlord that hasn't been terribly friendly to begin with.
And the ones who do live in those affordable housing, they don't like what's there, but they don't complain because they don't want to lose their spot because there's someone there that will just take it. And there's not enough housing there, not at all.
That is why in the summer, the university gave us some funding for us to go, and we're going to be doing some healthcare screening, but we're going to be also doing some focus groups with the Immokalee residents about their housing conditions, but connecting it with health. Mm-hmm. So we want to explore how the housing conditions have been impacting their health status from their own perceptions. And also we're going to do screening. So we're going to be checking how people are doing. That's going to be the first health indicator that we're going to have that is not based on their own statements and perceptions.
And another question I wanted to ask you both, how many of the people that you talked to were farm workers? What percentage would you say?
It's hard to tell because we asked them if they were employed part-time, but we didn't ask them the nature of their job.
Because I'm wondering if that would impact their health reportage. I mean, because when Jesus was, we had a sound from him a little earlier talking about his concerns with his parents who had worked in fields. Did you hear anything or any blowback from anybody about, you know, working in the fields, I'm exposed to pesticides and the difficult work and the sun and the heat, anything like that?
No. However, in one of the organizations that we call them our collaborators, the director approached me at the beginning when we were preparing for the study, and she was telling me that a very high percentage of the children in that school were having breathing problems, and she was afraid it was related to the toxic substances. So as a result of that, we added questions in our study about children, but not much came up. I mean, more than half of the people whom we ask about their children's health conditions, yes, indeed, asthma, respiratory, cold, and flus were the most mentioning health physical conditions identified, but they tended to say that their children's health was okay, at least a little more than half, two-thirds. So that takes us to think about, well, maybe this is some bias in their responses. It's part of the limitations of our study that maybe they were not ready to share more specifically about their children.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked with Dottie Cook before the show. Unfortunately, she's been unable to join us by phone. For some reason, we can't seem to get a hold of her. But she had mentioned that 34% of the population reported being told by a doctor at some point that they have an issue with their weight. Did you have that as part of your study as well, talking about weight?
It didn't come very specifically. And obesity was among the less frequently mentioned health conditions in the study. However, we know from that Florida State University, they have been doing projects and research on obesity. And actually, we're meeting with them in May to collaborate, the two universities. But apparently, I think, and I wonder, this is my speculation.
Like there may be an obesity thing, but they don't really think it's an issue.
They don't think it's an issue. It's part of our diet in the Latino culture to eat certain things, and activity may be less now. In our study, people came up as showing good health behaviors, and exercise was one of them. So we don't know. But again, we were talking with adults. We don't know about their children. And people may also have different perceptions about their own physical body. But the point is that Florida State University has been very involved in working with obesity in Immokalee. Educating, raising awareness. They have even a program that targets that and targets childhood trauma. So I wonder if that is taking care in part of the obesity problem that it's in Immokalee.
We also did ask if they thought themselves if they ate in excess. For that question, it was mostly no, they didn't. And also, after that question, we asked if they exercised, and most definitely most of them did. And also, since many walked to their destinations, they didn't have vehicles, and some didn't use public transportation, they said they walked a lot. So obesity, to me, in this finding, I didn't feel like there was much of a concern, and they didn't find it either.
When I think of Immokalee, I'm thinking that there's all kinds of fruits and veg. Is that realistic? Is there a lot of fresh produce that is part of the regular diet?
Well, I know they grow them. And there's an area in Immokalee, the farm market it's called.
Yeah, there's a farmer's market out there that's incredible. But
yes.
My curiosity is, though, is that something that they actually will consume while they're out there? Is that part of the cultural food traditions?
91% of the participants reported that they ate fruits, and 87% reported they ate vegetables. I'm assuming, given the socioeconomic and transportation situation of Immokalee, that they're consuming what they grow there. And a part that we haven't studied, that we don't know much about it, it's the quality of the fruits and the vegetables that they can grow in Immokalee in terms of the toxic substances. I don't really know. I should not be making those statements.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting, you know, insight.
It's a concern.
You know, because you're there and you're talking to him about it. It's just interesting. One would assume, but assuming usually is not part of a study.
Yes. But they did say, like you said, 90%. They do eat. They said often, every day at least, fruits and vegetables.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been really interesting talking with you. So next up is a study this summer. Are you going to be involved in that
as
well, Karina?
Yes, I will be involved in that most definitely.
Yes, we are going to provide six. We're going to coordinate for six health workshops in the community. So far, we have two churches and one organization that have become our partners in terms of providing the space and helping with recruitment. We're also going to be doing cholesterol, diabetes, heart pressure, and another one.
Glucose levels.
Mm-hmm. And the results are going to be right there when the participant may take the test. Then we're going to be pre and post testing the experience of awareness and learning for those who participate in our six workshops, with the intention of learning what content is helpful and how should we proceed. And after that, we're going to be doing some focus group, as I said before, to see what is the connection between how the housing conditions after Irma and the health conditions. Our intention is really contribute to the recovery of the area, to contribute to their rebuilding process.
By gaining and summarizing this information.
Yes. And by them gaining awareness, getting them. And there's other organizations that are helping us, like Rural Neighborhoods is helping us. And we're going to be also involved or getting support from the Omet Needs Coalition. So we're moving on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is all the time that we have for this part of our show. It's been so interesting talking with both of you, Dr. Liria Negroni and Karina Carcamo. I'm so excited to have you back on the show, too, because I want to hear about your next study.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, Mike Kinnear will be in the host seat for a history lesson on Jacob Summerlin, the cattleman known in the 19th century as King of the Crackers. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.